Sooners of Oklahoma at 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning in to another special edition episode of the Barry and Mac Show. I'm flying solo, but not really. So joining us today, special guest, Mr. Brian Etheridge of Sikkim 365. He's going to help us go behind enemy lines, take a look at what the Baylor Bears are going to be throwing at the Sooners this Saturday on ESPN Plus, right? So, Brian, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. It's a little bit of an honor here being one of your first guests. I mean, sort of there in the first week or so of getting the launch. So it's great to be here and looking forward to talking a little ball.
Absolutely, man. And we won't bury the lead here. OU has had their struggles this season, but so has Baylor a little bit. You know, coming off a championship run, it's interesting to see where the team is at. You lose your quarterback or kind of force him to move on, whichever, you know, folks want to believe. And I'm sure you can provide some insight there on that. But just the 3,000-foot bird's eye view of what Baylor has been this year, what has been your assessment?
I think it's been a year where the reload didn't happen as fast as everyone hoped it would, or I thought it would either as well. You've had some injuries on the offensive line, had some injuries on the defensive line, had a very physical game out in Provo where Baylor lost 7 starters during that game due to either concussions and 1 knee injury. So it was a little bit of a strange year where, you know, the gelling really didn't happen until this last game against Texas Tech, and that's the team that everyone expected to see all year long, while losing, you know, I think they lost 6 guys out of the secondary that all went to an NFL camp. Out of the 5, you know, out of 5 starters, you had another guy that was back there that went off to an NFL camp as well. So you had a lot of experience in the secondary, losing Terrell Bernard at linebacker as well, pretty much one of the coaches on the field. And, you know, just having that team has had to grow up. This current team had to grow up without those guys leading. And there was a little bit of a leadership void until the past few weeks. You know, they sort of started seeing it come around against Kansas and then obviously against Texas Tech, and getting the return of Khalil Keith on the offensive line, who'd missed all the games until we played half a game against Kansas, allowed Baylor to start running the ball like they had in 2021.
Yeah, running the ball has been such a crucial part to your all success. I mean, there was this perception, even in, you know, sort of going back to the Briles era, you know, that Baylor was really this vertical sort of air raid style passing team. And that was the one thing when OU brought in Lebby that I don't think every fan understood was that what made Baylor such a destructive team on offense was that they would get downhill on you, and they would really bring it to you in the run game, and then also had that deep vertical pass threat with guys like Coleman. I mean, you go back and you had Petty there at quarterback. And speaking of quarterback, I want to talk a little bit about this. What happened this past off season, and then what has been your assessment of Chapin thus far?
Bohannon was your starter last year against Oklahoma and ran the ball pretty effectively, and I think he had 116, 126 yards or something like that against Oklahoma in the Baylor victory. And during the spring, they had it open between Blake Chapin and Gary Bohannon, and Blake won the job. Gary just couldn't push the ball downfield like they wanted. He has a live arm, but just the decision making and getting the ball out, Chapin was doing that much better. Chapin will run a little bit, got the targeting hit against him, took him out against West Virginia. So that was sort of a turning point in that game as well. So, you know, Bohannon is a he's a solid quarterback. He, you know, he's injured now at South Florida, was starting there. But Chapin had a little bit lighter arm, a little bit quicker decision making, and he makes throws that Bohannon just can't make. And, you know, that's not a knock on Gary or anything like that. It's just, it is what it is at that point. So when the decision was made, they gave Gary enough time to transfer out. He did. You know, the staff wanted to keep him. They were, but as a backup, in which obviously when Chapin was knocked out against West Virginia, redshirt freshman Kyron Jones came in and did, was respectable, but they would much rather have had Gary Bohannon back there as the backup quarterback this year. But one thing that Chapin will do, he'll air it out. He's sort of got a little bit of Brett Favre in him. He'll try to make passes. He believes in his arm. He'll try to make passes sometimes, and people go, it's a no, 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 yes, or a just a no, 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 you shouldn't have thrown that ball at all type of guy, you know. And but he's a little bit smaller. You know, he's 6'1", 6 foot, 6 foot one, about, you know, 205 pounds versus Bohannon being 6'3", 240. So just two different kind of guys. But he will light it up downfield, and he's overthrown coverages, you know, many times this year with some 60-yard bombs where it's all in the air.
Do you think there's any, not necessarily buyer's remorse with that, but in making that decision as early as it seemed Aranda did? I know Riley's MO here was to really let that stuff go, you know, deep into fall camp. What was, is there any kind of pushback there from the fans as to how that played out?
I mean, there were some people that were upset that Gary transferred. But if anybody went to the spring game or watched the spring game, they saw Chapin outperform him. It was a little bit of a shock that they did that, that they did, you know, unseat the guy that got him to the Sugar Bowl and won a Sugar Bowl. You know, Aranda has always said person over player, that he's going to do the person better than the player. So that's the one thing that everyone understood, that he was making that decision early as for Gary as a person, and then he could transfer out and find his best opportunity or stay and remain the great teammate he was. He obviously had aspirations of playing in the NFL, and so he wasn't going to be the starter, so he moved on to become a starter at South Florida. There were some people that are still not happy because of the loss. You know, last year they beat BYU, and this year, you know, went on the road and lost in double overtime. Or that, you know, they beat West Virginia. You know, anytime something bad happens, you're going to have that part of the fan base that comes out and has the negative opinion of, well, in hindsight, 2020, you know, this guy might have done it. But again, you don't know until, you know, that you actually play a game with it. So there were people that were a little upset about it, but everyone pretty much understood it was best for Gary to let Gary have the opportunity to leave. And that's sort of the MO of Dave Aranda.
Staying with the offense a little bit, I know you touched base on them getting an offensive lineman back, but the run game, I know 29, I believe it's Reese, has had a pretty solid, nearing 1,000 yards. And then you've also got Holmes out there catching passes. I believe he's 6. Been trying to watch a lot of Baylor this year. What's been your kind of take on the skill guys? Does Baylor have that threat that can take the top off of a defense, which has really given OU fits this season? A lot of things have given him fits, but really having a guy like Quentin Johnson at TCU who could stretch you, Kansas had a few guys. Does Baylor offer that? And then also a run game, as the offensive line has seemed to improve this year, kind of feeling like hitting that peak against Tech, at least from outside looking in. What's been your thoughts there?
Now, Baylor does have, they have a very talented and deep wide receiver room. The issue has been they're all freshmen and sophomores, essentially, outside of Gavin Holmes. So you have Monterey Baldwin, who is their speed guy that had, I think a 60-plus yarder in the Sugar Bowl. He's had, I think, 2 or 3 this year over 60. And then Hal Presley is now finally coming into his own, who's a 4-star receiver who went to Auburn. He flipped from Baylor to Auburn and then spent, I think, 3 weeks on the Auburn campus and then transferred back to Baylor. So he's a big body, 6'3", 205 pounds, can really high point the ball, and he's starting to come into his own. So they were inexperienced and not getting separation to start the season, and I think that's got a lot of people, you know, some of the closer games, you know, against BYU, if those guys had performed a little better, they probably would have won that game, or if Baylor had made an extra point or a field goal or two that they missed. But it was something where those guys had to grow up. They're starting to grow up. And Gavin Holmes had a horrible game against Oklahoma State, then turns around and goes for 200 yards in the next game. So there's been some just sort of the consternation between that youth and having one guy who has experience. But again, Gavin Holmes has missed 3 years with medical injuries. With an ACL, he suffered his freshman year, and then tore it again his sophomore year, and then broke his foot his junior year, and so now here he is as a fifth year senior, essentially playing for the first time outside of the two or three games he played as a true freshman back in 2017. So it's good to see him do that. Very sure handed, gets open in the zones. Baldwin's going to be your guy that takes the top off, and he's missed three or four games this year got a concussion against BYU, with one of the guys that did, missed a couple games there, came back, got rolled up on against Kansas. He missed the last game against Tech. So you might have even seen more points scored if he'd have played, because he was going to be able to burn the secondary. If he plays, that's the guy you got to double over the top because he's going to burn you deep. He's a smaller guy, but he is a legit 4.43 guy as well. He's one of the fastest guys on the team, even including all the guys that went to the NFL last year who were running the 4.3s at the combine. So he was in that mix with those guys, but he's just a little bit small. And once he gets the step on you, there's no catching him.
And defensively, you know, moving to that side of the ball, Baylor has had just studs back there. I mean, on the defensive line, you've had Petrie in the secondary, who's just been a terror and absolutely was just a wrecking crew of a guy against Oklahoma. You know, every time they faced each other, you know, Baylor, they've had a few games this year. I mean, the West Virginia game obviously comes to mind. Oklahoma State comes to mind, but it's felt, and maybe I'm off base, maybe you all see it differently, it's felt like you guys have still had consistency in the defense. Maybe not to that same elite level, and sort of at all three levels that you saw from the Big 12 championship team a year ago. But how has Baylor been able to do that? Right, they've brought in some talented guys, but you aren't seeing them recruit necessarily, you know, top 15, top 10 classes. How has Aranda been able to do that with his staff? And then who are some of the guys this year who have taken those roles?
I think one of the things they did is recruit speed and size for the secondary, and also some speed or size for the defensive line. All the guys that they recruit can run. I mean, one of the guys that made an interception against Texas Tech, or two of the guys that made it. So we had five interceptions against Texas Tech, and four of those guys were sophomores or freshmen. So that's been sort of the issue, is learning the coverages. They ran a lot of just Tampa 2 start the year, and they were getting burned in it because they weren't able to do anything too specific outside of Tampa 2. Well, they came back this against Texas Tech, they played man for the first time all year. So they finally installed another package in the, you know, the eighth game of the year. They got the package installed. So that's been, I think, the growing pains of that secondary. The defensive line, they've been just rushing three because they've been afraid of the back end getting exposed, which they're still getting exposed because, you know, the defensive line wasn't getting a push. Against Texas Tech, they finally had the package installed for man, you know, man up on the islands, and they were able to release some of the linebackers into blitzes. And also Al Walcott, who's replaced Jalen Petrie, he was coming to the backfield quite a bit as well. He ended up having an interception, and he's one of the top guys for havoc plays, which, you know, Baylor tracks that in the Big 12. So he is sort of taking that Jalen Petrie role, but he's about 6'2", about 210, versus Petrie being 6 foot, about 195, 200 pounds, you know, now playing for the Texans. So you have a little bit of a mix. There's still a lot of athleticism back there. Even the linebackers all can really run. But experience in packages, experience running twists and stunts has been something that was really, it didn't really all hit home until for a full game until Texas Tech this last weekend. So they're sort of hitting their stride right now, but they're also going to be going into the toughest part of their schedule with Oklahoma, TCU, Texas, and K-State all coming up. Two of those at home, two on the road. And obviously, I mean, I don't think Baylor's won in Oklahoma since 2014. And so that's going to be a very difficult road trip for them. They were expecting Texas Tech to be really wild and loud and crazy, and it really wasn't. They sort of took the crowd out of the game early, and it was, you could hear Blake Shapen calling snaps, you know, from the stands, which you usually can't do on a, in a, on a road game.
Have you been surprised with what Aranda's been able to do in keeping what Rule built? I mean, go back, give credit to Briles also too, but in what Rule was able to kind of lay there in terms of a little bit different style than what Briles was, a little more flash, Rule was a little more kind of down in the dirt, you know, if you will.
Oh, blue and, collar all the way. Yeah.
Yeah. So has Aranda surprised you guys, or was this expected?
I think it was a little bit expected to have the defense that Baylor is having. I mean, you can go look at, you know, the recruit list and just start reading through those. But you watch the tape on all those guys, and you see guys that can really run and really want to play for him. And you know, running with that huge nose tackle, with, you know, with Apu in the middle there, it's really something that is unique. I don't think anybody else in the Big 12 really has a 6'4", 350-pound nose tackle.
Nope.
That is that kind of athletic that he is, and he could be an NFL first rounder. We, you know, he came off a little bit slow this early, but he really picked it up in the past three games, and it's going to be really interesting to see what his decision is at the end of this year. If he goes on, if he gets the grade he needs to be a first or second rounder, he's likely going to leave. And you'll get paid. And that's, I mean, that's great for Aranda, because he can point at that guy and say that guy left and went on and made millions, and now we can recruit with that. And that's sort of how he's been recruiting off the guys from LSU. They recruit Louisiana quite a bit now. And it's, you have to come to camps to get an offer from Baylor, essentially. And they go out there and they time every one of them, and they, and it's a, you know, almost NFL combine of what they're looking for. There have been some players that dominated camps, don't meet the measurements of what they want, and or they don't have the tape to back it up, because they might, you know, play like, look like Tarzan, play like Jane type of things, where you can go out there and be a combine warrior, but your tape's going to back it up. But if those things match up, then Baylor uses, you know, ready to offer on the spot, because most of the guys that come to camps, they've already seen the tape, they're ready for it. You can see the cornerbacks are in the 6 foot range. Tevin Williams out of Stillwater, Oklahoma, that, you know, played with Mike Gundy's son, you know, was state 100 meter guy in Oklahoma, the state champ. And that was a big steal for Baylor to get him out. And, you know, he had an interception against Texas Tech in the end zone. And he's starting to come into his own as well. He's past three games, he's played quite a bit more. So you can see just that evolution of that secondary coming in, allowing the you know, the front seven to go after the ball a little bit more.
So looking at Baylor's schedule, before we get a little bit of the kind of overall Big 12 outlook, you've obviously got the road game against Oklahoma, got to play K-State, but you get them in Waco, you get TCU in Waco. Those are two of the best teams that the Big 12, I think, has to offer this year. I think that's pretty objective. Then you finish at Texas. Just kind of your lens here, how do you think this plays out schedule-wise for the Bears?
It's been a crazy year in the Big 12. I mean, Oklahoma game right here, both teams are going for bowl eligibility at this game. So this is going to be, I think, it'll be a very physical game. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I haven't really put down my prediction yet. Baylor did play against Levy's offense last year at Ole Miss. Gabriel and Corral are much different players. Bayer knocked Crowell out of the game early. You know, I think he had two interceptions, and then he sprained his ankle or went out of the game after, I think, the fourth or fifth sack.
That's right, yeah.
So Bader's played this. Obviously, Bader has plenty of tape on the offense. About 8 years worth, maybe nine seasons worth. So that's going to be interesting as well. They know that, Gray, Oklahoma's a great running back. So that's going to be, it's going to be something if Bader can contain the run against Oklahoma and get pressure on Gabriel. That's the one thing that they did against Texas Tech, thing they did against Kansas, is, contain the quarterback, make him make passes. But Gabriel is probably the best quarterback they're going to face of the last three. And then you have K-State. And for some reason, K-State is a house of horrors in Waco. And they come to town in 2012, and they were number one in the country, and Bader was just fighting to be relevant and knocked them off and just destroyed K-State. And Colin Klein, the offensive coordinator now, so I doubt he's forgotten that. And it's a night game. So it's going to be Bader's first night game, I think, 3 years. So the fan bases are already picking it up, and they're excited about the night game. Then TCU comes in, and that's essentially, there's some hatred there between the fan bases, going back through all the Southwest Conference, and TCU is a school that was in Waco until it got burnt down, and then they moved to Fort Worth. And so there's a lot of bad blood between those two schools, So that one is usually a very, very, very physical game. And TCU had some luck this year playing against people. They knocked Gabriel out of the game on a cheap shot. You can't say it's anything but a cheap shot, that hit that he took. They knocked out Daniels as well. So they haven't really faced anybody's number one. And Sanders was hurt when they played Oklahoma State. Martinez was out when they played K-State. So it's going to be really interesting to see what TCU and Bader, when they square off, if they're both healthy enough to do it. And then Texas, there's some hatred there. And obviously with everything that's gone down over 120 years of playing each other, they're going to come out after each other in that game as well. And so all four of those games will be very physical, very emotional. And, Bader needs to win out to make it to the Big 12 championship. And that's their goal. But right now they want to be number 1-0 against Oklahoma. But playing, on the road at Gaylord is going to be really difficult. I mean, that's but they have to win that game. If they don't win that game, they need to regroup and somehow get that sixth win and get to a bowl game and keep the momentum going forward.
Yeah, it's this Oklahoma team. We didn't know to start the season if what that tough stretch would be. We thought we had an idea, thought it would be more of the back half with Baylor and Oklahoma State, not really having any idea that the TCU, Kansas State, and Texas this year, although little more of a fluke game. I think OU still loses that ball game, but not having Gabriel in just made the offense, it was entirely dysfunctional. So there was no way they were going to get around that.
They were running you and I out there at that point. And that was, I was watching it just shaking my head going, it was interesting to watch how the backups just, you don't want to say they're not ready or not capable, but you'd expect to see those guys throwing the ball a little bit. But it sort of went back what we saw when we were Big 12 media days, when Brent Venables said they had 47 new players that had never worn Oklahoma Crimson and Cream on the field. And I was like, oh, at that point, I thought this is a little bit, this is going to be a little bit of a different year for Oklahoma, because when you have 47 new guys, it is difficult, to have everybody on the same page. And I think that we started to see this now, similar to what Baylor's going through, where they're starting to gel now and having that come around. And they're both in a similar position right now where they're starting to play their best ball of the year. And they wish they probably could get a couple of those games back that they lost it in the earlier part of the first eight games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Baylor fans can have an appreciation for, you know, kind of losing a guy. I mean, granted, it was under different circumstances with Riley and Briles, but just even though you have talent, quote unquote, on the team, when you have so much quick attrition, you lose a guy who was such an integral piece to your success in your culture, right? That this was sort of Lincoln Riley's culture at that point. And you saw what happened with Baylor, and it didn't take them long for them to get it flipped around. Kind of outside looking in, what has been your overall assessment of the Venables hire?
I questioned it a little bit at the beginning because he'd been passed over before. And then and with Big 12 Media Days, he was so nervous. And I was like, oh, come on, man. But, you know, I felt a little sorry for him at first because he was so pumped up, but he was so nervous, and he jumbled his words a couple of things, and some people made fun of him online. And I'm like, I'm sitting there going, you know, I have a good friend that coached at Clemson, right? They love him. They played at Clemson. They love him. And I'm like, and they're like, yeah, he'll be fine. Give him 2 or 3 years. But when he lost that big to Texas, I was like, oh, no. You know, please don't make rash decisions on him. Give him a little time, because you do have to install your culture. And his culture is much different than Riley. The offensive and defensive coaches, you know, you can hear him talk about family and about, you know, togetherness. And that's what defensive coaches do. Offensive coaches, a little bit more in star power. We're going to blow you up, right? And that's the thing he started doing, you know, instilling in it. And Riley's defense wasn't that physical, you know, compared to some of the Oklahoma defenses under Stoops. And so you saw that culture move across there, and Riley being at USC is more of a fit because the Pac-12, I mean, you don't want to say it's soft, you know, football isn't soft, but when you see a running team from the Big 12 run into a Pac-12 team, it's usually not a good result for the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And when Baylor started getting very, very physical with Lincoln Riley teams, that's when Baylor had success against OU. And last year, obviously, there was the bad blood at the end of the game where Aranda kicked back the field goal and Riley threw a fit about it. And Aranda explained to him on the field why we're doing this. It's for a tiebreaker to get to the Big 12 championship. And it got, you know, it just seemed like, you know, somebody peed in his Cheerios. And, you know, as a coach, you can't let that kind of emotion out, you know, and let other people see it. And I think that's how Riley sort of, at that point, showed some of his colors of what happened and why he left. For me, no reason to leave OU. But he did and went to USC for more money. But the culture change going over to Venables was going to take time because, again, you lost, you know, your Rattler, Stogner. Gosh, I mean, just talent after talent just left. And they didn't all go to USC. A lot of them went elsewhere.
Yep.
And that was something very difficult Preventables to overcome early, but now you're starting to see some of his guys growing up, and that's it's going to take a little time. I think next year they'll be even better, but this year is just going to be some growing pains, which against Texas was a major growing pain, against K-State it was a growing pain, and things like that. You know, losing at home, you know, like they did against K-State, you know, was a, you know, it was a kick in the shin. And for Baylor to lose at home against Oklahoma State like they did was a kick in the shin. And this whole Big 12 season has just been one, you know, barrel of knives coming out of everybody, except for TCU. For somehow they're skipping through it all right now.
They're hanging in there.
Yeah, they still have to play. Let's see, they still got Texas. They still got Baylor. And then I think who they played. They played K-State this weekend.
Yep, so, K-State, yep. Yep.
What happens there, right? So if K-State somehow pulls it off against TCU, you know, again, we're back in a free-for-all, and everybody's going to be punching as much as possible.
So before I get kind of what you expect to see, you know, in this game Saturday, as we've touched on a little bit of that, you know, the Big 12 going through changes, and Baylor's going to be a part of the future changes, you know, more long-term. Mm-hmm. OU obviously won't. Does the Big 12, I want to ask this a little bit differently, because I think everybody agrees that the Big 12 is going to be a healthier conference by adding an Ohio market, adding Florida, you know, the stability that those states offer and the access that they offer in terms of recruiting. I mean, you just can't, that you can't overvalue that enough. It is so incredibly important for the health of a conference to be able to tap into those areas. But I want to ask is, where do you see this conference in terms of tiering, the tiers stacking up, that hierarchy of conferences, with OU Texas going to the SEC, I think probably in 2 years. I think it's going to last a little bit personally, just my opinion. Where do you see the conference stacking up? Is it going to be still in sort of the ilk, although seen a little better this year? I think people have recognized that. Do they have a chance to get past what the Big Ten is going to be? Obviously, the Pac-12 is searching for answers. Where do you see them in terms of conference hierarchy?
Yeah, I would see them as a solid number three at this for going forward. I mean, I've watched a lot of football. I mean, the ACC and the Pac-12 to me are just, it's unwatchable at times. The ACC, I you go look at the metrics right now, and I think the Big 12 is number one or right against the SEC West is what, you know, they keep breaking the SEC West out and putting the Big 12 under it. And you're like, okay, but put the rest of the SEC in, yep, with the East. This year is, you know, the Big 12 is up there, metrics wise. Now, viewership wise, that's the issue, because there's not an Ohio State, there's not a Texas, nor an OU going to be in it. So the numbers right now have been very favorable, viewership. But it also depends on which broadcast network you're going to be on. If you're on ABC or Fox, you're going to have a much better viewing than you are on FS1. And ESPN Plus game coming up here, I mean, that one, where all of us were just shaking our head going, what happened? But again, OU signed with ESPN Plus this year. They hadn't played a game on it yet, I don't think. So
they'd won Kent State.
Okay.
But
ESPN's going to get their blood, right?
Yeah.
They're going to go out and they're going to get their pound of flesh. And that's what they've done. And we're all just sitting there going, come on. Of all games, you're going to put Baylor OU on that, not one of these others. But has Baylor and OU fallen that far? No. That's just the television partner going, hey, we're going to make people sign up in Oklahoma because we just paid OU money to come onto this platform. They've been on Bally's and Fox Southwest or Fox Oklahoma all these years. And hey, you're coming to this, you know, you're going to sign up to see these conference games. And, you know, it's such a money grab. And that's the sad part. But everybody from Baylor, you know, we've been on it 3 years. So we're like, okay, we, you know, watch our volleyball and our softball and our baseball on there. You know, so great. We're going to see a football game. It's got to flip back and forth when you get through it. But I think that after getting the extension done or getting that signed this coming week, which was announced Sunday, they're in a solid position. Making $50 million, you know, the SEC will make, you know, 60 to 80 to whatever is the projection. And I think they're projecting the same or a little bit more at the Big Ten. The Big 12 is not going to catch up to those guys in revenue. But when they face each other, on the field, they need to win. And that's all you can do. If Baylor plays Oklahoma in the future in a college football playoff, if Baylor wins, then it brings the Big 12 respect. They lose, same old Big 12. You know, so you have to follow through and compete on the field and win. And there's plenty of players to go around in this country. There's plenty of players all over, and it also depends on how's the NIL going to shake out. Is there going to be the, you know, paying players? If that's the case, then the Big 12 will be paying players just the same as the others. In the end, you got to find your guys, and you got to build your culture, and you got to be ready to play and innovate and continue to call the right plays and recruit the right players, and that's where you are. And I think that's what the Big 12 has to do, and then they have to win on the field. And winning on the field, they've done it in basketball. I mean, Baylor and Kansas, the last two national champs. Baylor's women's basketball has won three titles. that's not going away. So they'll still have that brand recognition in basketball and the brand recognition they have in football. But they're not going to have that measuring stick of people going, well, they beat Texas or they beat Oklahoma, even though Texas didn't make a bowl game last year. But you still hear that kind of talk when really and truly Oklahoma State was likely the best team in the conference last year, and Baylor, you know, nipped them there at the end of the game. So that was a very interesting year last year to see that in the numbers that those two teams put up, that people actually watched the game more than any other conference except for, you know, the SEC and the championship. So that was, fun to see. And at that point, you have to build off that, though. You can't fall back and you can't become, a lesser than after you've succeeded. You still have to keep pushing forward and keep succeeding and building your brand. And your mark has sort of got a vision of that, very much out, very, very different than Bowlesby. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he implements his vision into the rest of the, the rest of the conference.
It's been such a tumultuous decade for the Big 12. Yeah. I mean, you look at where they were at, golly, in 2011, 2010. I mean, it felt like the conference at that point was, and it legitimately was. You had teams, shopping for the Pac-12. You had obviously Nebraska and Missouri and A&M had all just left. So to see them bounce back like they have and have such, I actually think Oklahoma, even though they didn't win the conference semis, I think consistently having a team represented in the playoff has been a huge factor. The fact that TCU and Baylor were both, heavily in the running, and you could argue either one should have been in the game, in the semis, the inaugural year. I think the Big 12 is healthy. I mean, it's as healthy as it's ever been, and the leadership I think is better. The coaching, I mean, one would argue, talking just football, the coaching top to bottom is probably the best that any league has to offer. I don't know there's no easy outs. None. There's not a bad coach at a single school. I mean, it is really solid coaching, from top to bottom. And I mean, if anybody still needs to kind of prove themselves, I would say it's, who OU brought in, this past year, and just kind of being objective. He's a guy who's still,
I think Neil Brown's got a little bit still to go there, and he might be on the way out.
For
some reason, Iowa State, Matt Campbell had a lot of love, but not a good year. Last year was a fall down too. So it's been it's going to be interesting to see what happens there in a couple of years if he can't build off back what he had with Brock Purdy. That's going to be interesting.
So finishing this week, you've been so generous with your time. But end of this week, Saturday, OU and Baylor will lace them up, strap them up, and play 2:00 on ESPN+. Don't want to necessarily ask you to make a prediction. I know that you guys do some stuff on your platform in that regard. But how do you see this thing shaking out? Is this going to be a close, kind of low-scoring affair? Maybe the Iowa State game OU just had, or do you think some points get scored?
I think you have some points scored. I think that, the offense that Oklahoma has, Gabriel, if Baylor can contain and keep him in the pocket and get pressure on him, it'll be interesting. I do think Baylor can run on Oklahoma. I mean, that's been the Achilles heel for Oklahoma's defense. I think giving up as many rushing yards as they have in the conference. And that's one of Baylor's strengths. So I'm pretty sure Baylor's probably going to lean on that. But the one thing that Baylor is a little bit weak on is the pass defense, which they had the great game against Tech. But still, that's still not Dylan Gabriel or, the athleticism of the Oklahoma receivers. So they're going to have to contain Gray and Gabriel, and keep those guys from breaking long runs on them, and then also keep the ball out of, the receivers and keep them in front of the safeties. So that's going to be what Baylor has to do. For Oklahoma, they're going to have to stop the run somehow. And at that point, if they don't stop the run, then Baylor's going to open up the offense and be passing around on them because they're going to have to be putting too many guys in the box. So that's going to be, it's sort of like you have two strengths going against against each other's weaknesses. And so I think there could be some serious points put up on the board there this week.
Brian, I want to thank you so much for your time. You've been so generous today. If you could tell people where they can find you and the site.
So site, Sikkim365.com. Got a free side, pay side. You got both. You can find us on 365 Sports YT on Twitter for our YouTube page, which is our radio show. We do 3 to 6 with David Smoke, Craig Smoke, and Paul Catalina. They do 3 to 6 every day. It's a great show. 25,000 plus subs. Ton of Oklahoma State. I mean, all over the Big 12. They cover the entire Big 12, not just Baylor. You can find me, B_Sikkim365. You can find our other Twitter page, is Sikkim365. But we have, we try to bump out as much content as we can for Baylor. And then our radio show is just all Big 12. We have a Baylor-only section. Then we take all that and move it over there. So it's sort of, we keep all the Big 12 and all the national in one area. And that way people can, not get stuck down just with Baylor stuff or flood that over. And we want to make sure that everybody enjoys what those guys do. And we've been blessed with having the studio there and keeping everything going and with realignment and having great sources on what's happening and all the different teams. We've had, Venables on, we've had Castiglione on, we've had, you name any AD in the conference, we've had him on the radio show. We've had Yormark this last week. He was on, and he sort of broke it that they were going to have this. And it's like, oh, we're pulling back a little bit. You could hear it in his voice, like he sort of overspoke and then pulled back on what he said. And so we've had a really, we've been really fortunate and really blessed on the team we put together. And we enjoy it. We'll have a guy there Saturday filming. So even if you don't, you're not a Baylor fan, you're an OU fan. We do a thing called Views on the Brazos, where we do just raw footage of the game and just do 15, 20 minutes of plays. And it's just raw footage. So you can hear the crowd reaction and the players' reactions, and you don't have the commentary. And it's a really fun thing that we do with that. We do for all of the Baylor sports. But we'll have a couple people there on, at Gaylord on Saturday to take it all in.
Brian, thank you so much. As I said earlier in the episode, I believe it was off air, just how much, us launching Sooners360.com and how, looking at you guys from afar and what you've done was certainly an inspiration, and what, I think a lot of sites and sort of entities should aspire to be. You guys have done it really well, yourself being a huge part of that. And we want to thank you so much for having you on today.
Oh, thank you very much. And believe me, if you ever have questions or have anything, reach out to me. You have my number. You can always call me, and I'll be happy to help you with y'all's platform going forward. Or if there's ideas you think, is this going to work? Shoot them off of me. It's like I told you earlier, we've been doing this close to 20 years. So in some form or another, and a lot of mistakes, a lot of things learned. But the one thing we want to do is make sure everybody, has a platform they can go to and get solid information from.
Thank you so much, Brian.